This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today.
All one needs to do is look at yesterday and see the undone things. Yep, those are my failures.
Welcome to another episode of A Productive Conversation. I'm Mike Vardy, and this is another episode of PM Talks. We're making our way through this season of very special episodes that we produce once per month, and we haven't failed to do one yet. Although we are going to talk about failure during this conversation. Actually, it was interesting because I had another one planned that you're going to hear the next time that we roll around with one of these special episodes where I'm in conversation with Patrick Rome. But Patrick really wanted to talk about failure. There was some stuff that he wanted to address. And let's face it, failure is something that we can all relate to. There's been lots of things thrown around about failure. We get into that. We get into the idea of, you know, all of the things that you can think about when it comes to failing and choice. And we try to relate this back to our previous conversations as well. So hope you get a kick out of it. Here is the conversation that Patrick and I had, another PM Talks, this time about failure. Enjoy.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Great. Just want to make sure that I've set everything up correctly.
You have not failed to do that. Considering what we're going to talk about today, I figured that was a good way to start.
Failed. Great way to start.
Set things up correctly.
Yeah. I'm like fired up today. My brain's popping with stuff.
It's kind of interesting because when you brought up that topic with me, the idea of talking about failure, I mean, it comes up a lot in the entrepreneurial space, right? Like a lot, right? You hear the old adages of, you know, the best baseball players in the world only hit 30% of the time. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you look at shooting percentages of basketball players and all that mm-hmm. stuff, but it's interesting because the fact that when things don't go your way can be perceived as failure, right? Like when that happens, it can be received as failure, right? Mm-hmm. So there's stuff that's out of your control, right? There's external factors, mm-hmm. but it's because the failures have such negative association with them, just in general. And because our brain likes to go to where bad things live, because that's just this for survival purposes.
It's so much fun there.
Right. Well, yeah. It's like, you know, but that to me is the part that I don't think gets enough coverage or enough play, is the idea of we get it, you know, because when you achieve an amazing goal, like the amount of time that you can revel in that, you can revel in that a long time, but emotionally, like chemically, your body goes, all right, what's next? Right? Like, you know, but with failure, it's like, man, like you can just,
I want to dwell there for a while.
Exactly. But stay I don't think people really talk about that part. They just talk about the getting past the failure or fail forward, like all the cliched stuff. Right.
Sure. It's only failure if we perceive it as such.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that we have complete control over that we can change our perception around it. So one of the links that I sent you that I'm hoping you'll post in the show notes.
Well, now I have to, but yeah.
Well, sure. Yes, of course. Because I'm going to talk about it. So went to conferences at my daughter's school today. And in the area where the seniors mainly hang out, they have a college rejection board. where students can post their rejection letters that they've received. Of course, they anonymize them, so you don't know, like, gosh, who got rejected from Hennepin County Technical College or something.
Right.
But, you know, but so you can, but I love, I just, there's so many layers there, right? Because, yeah, you can be like, gosh, I really wanted to get into Swarthmore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hope no one knows that I applied and got rejected. That would be embarrassing, that sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you can white out your name and put it up on this board and kind of make almost an ironic joke about it.
It almost acts like a totem of sorts, right? Like, you know, like
a totem of sorts. Yes, exactly. And I would argue that there's two other layers to it that come to my mind. Layer number one is it also is a way to say to your fellow students, hey, you're not alone.
Right.
I understand what you're going through. I too applied to Yale and got rejected. And even though you would never in a million years put your rejection letter from Yale up on the board, I will to let you know that it's okay and it's going to be okay, right? Then there is the other layer of, and this is, you know, a little bit more of my own personal beliefs and kind of the mixture of choice and fate, right? That perhaps this is a way to celebrate paths that you shouldn't have gone down anyway.
Right. Well, what's that phrase, seek and ye shall find, right? You hear that, right?
Yes.
But seek what? Find what? It's so vague, right? Like, obviously, when you seek, you will find what?
Yeah.
You may not find what you're seeking.
Yeah, this is true. This is true, so, right?
Right.
You know, and sometimes the universe puts in front of you, kind of roadblocks.
Right.
For reasons.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
You know, and offers you other paths for reasons.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't know what those are. One of the things that I write in my book, hopefully coming out soon here, or will be out by the time that you post this, which would be lovely. That's a note from, from me to myself to get this done. Some things in life, some choices we make have immediate consequences.
Right.
But 95 immediate at all. And oftentimes we don't even, we get so far down the path that you can't even necessarily link the consequence or what's happening here to this choice that I made years ago, right? But the truth of the matter is that our lives are entirely driven by choices. Everything we do from the moment we open our eyes to the minute that we close them, both of which are also choices, I might add.
Yep.
Everything else we do is just a series of choices, you know, from the brushing our teeth to the combing our hair, to the putting on our shoes, to the walking out the door, to the going to the job. Like, it's all choices, right? And because we make so many choices, literally thousands, tens of thousands of them throughout our day, we don't necessarily always think of, like, you know, they seem like mundane, normal choices, right? But the choice to brush our teeth every day has the consequence of having a good dentist visit 6 months from now, right?
Yeah.
You know, we don't necessarily, we kind of know it works like that,
right?
You know, but it's not necessarily a conscious decision all the time. What? And sometimes it's just brushing your teeth is what you do because it's what you've always done because it's what your mom told you to do when you first got teeth.
And interestingly, you can do it wrong. Like, I can tell you that, you know, especially when it comes to, and this, these go hand in hand, like the idea of choice, which we talked about in a previous episode, we'll link to it, but also the idea of failure. Like, I'm going to give you a really silly example, but I think it's apt. I remember reading well into my adulthood that floss your teeth, then brush them. I'm like, well, that that makes sense, but guess what I had done? But guess what I had?
After. Oh my gosh, that makes perfect sense.
I had been taught brush then floss. That's what I was taught. I don't know if you were taught that way, but I was.
Same.
Right.
Same. But you're right. That makes perfect sense.
But because, you know, it was kind of the way I was taught, I did that. So it wasn't really a choice because I didn't know there were other options. I mean, there were, but they didn't seem like it wasn't, you know, I mean, no one's going to really go.
Yeah.
No,
yeah. You just didn't know what other choice to make.
What if I flipped this?
It wasn't a choice. Just, yeah. It was a choice that you thought you had to make.
Right. Right. And so what's weird is, and this is again, very kind of reductive, but it's, I'm not going to necessarily say that I've, after finishing that and then looking elsewhere and going, oh, wait, like the prevailing wisdom is floss, then brush. Man, I've failed at taking care of my teeth for so long because of this, right? Nice. I'm not saying that actually, and my teeth are not great. So, I mean, and it goes, it's actually tied to the fact that didn't get braces, all that stuff, couldn't afford it. You know, you go down that path, but you have no idea how innocuous or small that little amount could make you. And again, whether it's teeth brushing, whether it's running a business, whether it's writing, like submitting, you know, a book to someone, the idea of like that little feeling of, man, I failed at this thing that seems so small. Imagine how many things I've failed at that are much bigger. Now,
yeah.
What's fascinating to me about this whole thing, especially, and we've got other links, we'll talk more about that, those as well, some of the other stuff. But as I was thinking about this before we started chatting about it, which was only about 15 minutes before we really jumped on this conversation, you know, the idea of, hey, I want to talk about this. I'm like, oh, this is a great idea. Is the only way to get comfortable with, the only way to grow, the only way to succeed is not the right term here, but to grow, to live, is to have a good relationship with failure. And over time, and when I say failure, I'm using the general sense, but I think over time it gets, I wouldn't say it gets easier, but its impact, like its general impact of failing at something, I think it gets, I wouldn't say muted is not the right word, but it doesn't weigh on you as much. And I think that comes with wisdom and experience and all that stuff. So, I mean, again, the brushing teeth, flossing teeth thing, I was like, that, like, it's not like I dwelled on it. It was like, well, I guess I'm just going to do it this way from now on. And that's it. Like, moving forward, this is how I'm going to take care of my teeth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a lot of ways that, like, that can be applied to a lot of other things outside of that. Like, oh, well, I screwed that up. Next time I'll do it this way. So it, ultimately, failure is a form of growth. Failure, you can learn things in failures, like you said, not just opening up different paths, but also what not to do in the future, right? Like what, maybe I won't go down this path this time, right? Like the touching of the stove. Ah, I failed to keep my hand safe because I touched the stove because it was hot, right? I guess I won't do that again, right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's all this learned behavior. The tricky part is how to make sure that failure doesn't overwhelm to the point where it keeps you where you are.
Yes. As,
right?
Yes. Well, and also to change your perception around it, or at least around certain failures, right? You know, in the same way that these seniors who have opted to posting their rejection letter up on this board have built a different perception around it, right?
Right.
You know, they are almost celebrating the fact that they got a rejection. Right, they're flipping the table on the rejection and on the emotions and the perceptions one could have behind it.
It's not letting them define them. Yeah,
it's not letting them define them. And more importantly, it is not. You know, I really do believe, and this sounds herky jerky, but I really do believe that oftentimes the universe puts certain obstacles or guardrails, certain guardrails on your path.
Yep.
Right? So if there's a direction that you're supposed to go, if you try to go this way, something stops you. If you try to go that way, something kind of stops you because you're supposed to go this way. Right.
Yep.
And I do think to a certain extent, part of the rejection board at the school, at least from a personal perspective of the students, is an acknowledgement of that, an acknowledgement that, hey, I was supposed to go to, you know, or I had applied to go here, I had applied to go there. Instead, I am here, and this is where I'm supposed to be. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. Totally. Yeah. I wonder if it's worth noting that we fail at something daily.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Especially if you're the parent of a teen, apparently.
You can just drop off at parent, right?
Exactly. Yes.
I mean, everything is your fault when you're parenting a teenager.
Oh, my gosh.
And they'll be sure to tell you.
Oh, well, and you know, especially when it's not. It's your fault, right?
Or this episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business, and even your family today. I think it's fascinating when, you know, when we think about like teenage, because my son's 14 in July, like he'll be 14 years old. So he's in that range of knowing more than me, but not actually knowing more than me. And, but he knows well enough that because there's newer stuff, he can go after me there in most instances, but it has to be challenging for anyone, like for you and me, because we have tech savviness that maybe some people don't, right? Like I think more people do than a lot would, you know, at our age than we even would like to think. Like there's plenty of people out there that can, you know, handle all the technological stuff that's coming our way, either with wonder or with just curiosity or even aptitude, right?
Yeah.
But the other day my son he says, I want to get this game. I'm like, oh, well, what game is it? He goes, oh, it's Portal. Like Portal, the game from like way long. He goes, yeah, he goes, I know you know what the game is, but do you know? I'm like, he goes, we need to download Steam for the Mac and do all that. I'm like, yeah. I go, I don't think it's going to work because I have a newer Mac, but we'll try it. And so he downloads Steam. He didn't know that I actually owned Portal on Steam. I bought it a long time ago. And the reason I bought it was largely because Jonathan Colton, who my son happens to have shared the namesake of, because Jonathan Colton was the one that kind of wrote back to me when I said, hey, I think I might want to pursue this career thing. And he actually wrote back saying, yeah, you should. Hence awesome. Why Colton is named as he is.
Oh, but wow.
When I told him that, I said, he goes, like what? Like Jonathan Colton has something to do? I'm like, yeah, the cake is not a lie, still alive. He goes, oh. And the look on his face of just like, oh, crap, I don't like. And he goes, well, are you good at the game? I'm like, probably not. You know, it's been a long time since I've played it. And I was never really the person that dedicated a ton of times to games when I became an adult as a kid. Yeah, sports. Mm-hmm. But just those moments where even a moment like that, when you're dealing with kids who assume you fail all the time, like dinner wasn't good or whatever, because dinner was not good. I followed the recipe last night for dinner, did not turn out great. And my teenage son is more than willing to tell me, well, this isn't very good. And I'm like, well, thank you for that, you know, like, and not taking it personally. But when this happened, it was very much like, oh, like, there was a bit of a, it elevated the mood. It elevated my, you know, like it kind of counterbalanced the failure of that thing. So sometimes I think we go in with our preconceived notions of what we expect something to be like, and then all mm-hmm. of a sudden it gets turned around on us, like it happened for him. Same thing with the other day we were watching TV. He came home. I was watching a documentary, and he said, "Dad, we have to watch something." I don't know if he goes, "I think it's time that I've heard a lot about this, and it's Monty Python. Do you like Monty Python?" I'm like,
are you aware of this Monty guy?
Meanwhile, I'm sitting here going, I've done the John Cleese talk. Like, I've shared that talk so many times, but I also had a small career for a while in comedy where I built a sketch troupe using a lot of the principles that, you know,
yeah,
Monty Python, Kids in the Hall, SCTV all did.
Yes. Yeah.
And so he said, yeah, like we should watch. He goes, "I've heard Life of Brian is good." He goes, "But I've heard the Holy Grail is good." I'm like, "I haven't seen that in so long. Let's sit and watch it." And we did.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
And it was just like those moments. So I think when you open yourself up, it's vulnerability is the key here. I think, I know mm-hmm. I danced around, but the idea of being vulnerable, yes, it opens you up to the idea of failure, small and big, but it also is the only thing that opens you up to growth, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, those kids
putting those letters up there, even anonymous, that's still an act of vulnerability.
Oh, yeah. You failed,
right? Like, you oh, know, it's gosh. You. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Right. Well, and, you know, quite frankly, I'm betting that, you know, Beatrix's school is a relatively small one. You know, senior class has maybe, let's just call it maybe 75 or 80 kids in it. And so I'm willing to bet that you can just kind of look at some of the colleges and take a reasonable guess as to whose rejection letter that is, right? You know, right. Yep. You know, because the kids have been talking about, yeah, I think I'm going to apply here and here and here and there, you know. I mean, it's part of the conversation when they get to be, you know, late junior year, you know, early senior year, is, you know, talking about colleges and what their plans are and what they're thinking about and that sort of thing, you know. And so, you know, some kids saying, yeah, I think I'm gonna actually apply to Yale, and, you know, you see the college rejection for Yale, and the kid who mentioned he was going to apply to Yale doesn't say anything about getting into Yale.
Yep. 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 Well,
it doesn't take math to make that a quick way.
So
right,
here's an interesting twist on this too. So my daughter, of course, she's going to university next year, right? She has been accepted to the local university, which she is not going to go to because she wants to go somewhere else. She got accepted to another university that she had been talking about for years and was very excited when she got the acceptance. However, she has another application into another school at, you know, on the other side of the country, basically. Mm-hmm. The one that she got accepted to, it's not in our city, but it's a much closer, you know, it's still a drive, a significant drive or short plane ride away. The other mm-hmm. one is like literally a 5 to 6 hour train, a plane ride. Right. So I asked, it was yesterday, I think, as of this recording, where we were talking about it. I said, "Have you heard from, you know, the other university yet?" And she had already had issues with giving them transcripts. She gave them the transcript. There was like a lot of back and forth, PDFs, all that stuff. And it just seems like there was a lot of friction with the application process where it wasn't like, it was all technological. Like, it was all the technical stuff. Like, it didn't upload properly or they didn't get it or something, even though she submitted her official transcripts. But I asked her, I said, "Okay, now you haven't accepted anywhere yet. You certainly, you haven't rejected the local university yet, which you probably should do because you're not going there and it frees up a spot for somebody." I go, "But you know, whatever." I said, "But let me ask you this." And by the way, she's had conversations about this other university at this point, and she was fairly high on it, but that's waned a bit since she's had conversations with others. And I said, "All right, so you've gotten the one that you knew you wanted to go to. And now you had this third choice. Number one, because most people say apply to three. That way you're going to which is good conventional wisdom.
Sure.
But she got into the second one, which is the one, like, I mean, it's like, you know, you play the lottery. If you play three times, you have three chances. You play once, you have one. Yeah. Right. So I asked her, and I asked her in a way that I think was good, but no, I mean, because I didn't want to say, what will you do? I was like, if you get accepted exactly the way that you want to this other university, do you think your reaction will be the same as what you got when you found out you got on from the one that is just slightly out of town? Mm-hmm. And that was the question, not will you be happy if it, like, I wanted to draw the comparison, because she doesn't need to seek failure anymore in that case, honestly. Like, she could stop at this point. She could say, that's it, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, and this is where sunk cost fallacy comes into failure, right? Well, I already applied. I already did all the work to put in the application. We already spent the $100 application fee. I'm like, but that's part of the process. Like, it's not like, you know, you're shopping on Amazon or Costco and you're like, I don't like this thing, I'll just return it, no harm, no foul. You still lose stuff along the way, whether it's a delivery to the book. But I asked, and she gave me, her answer was very, like, she's like, no, I think I would much rather, like, I don't think I'd react the same way.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, so what are you going to do? And she didn't make a choice then and there, but it gave her something to think about. I mean, I think ultimately, and we actually did some interesting stuff where we kind of did some pros and cons and stuff, but it's interesting that at this point, the failure of getting into that school is moot.
Yes.
If she gets it, once a decision is made on their part.
Yes.
But at this point, the ball is in her court. And I'm like, you could literally end this right now. You could literally, if you wanted to, again, I'm not, you can go either way. You could say, you're already going to end it with a one school. You could literally say, you got in, you could be like, that's it. I'm going to apply. I'm going to accept, because there's housing stuff that needs to be taken care of. And the way I look at it is, this is an opportunity for her to figure out what, once the choices, like, and this goes back to choices too. Once you got what you wanted, like, once you, you know, are you okay with that? Or do you need to go, do you need to know that you got into the other thing so you can turn it down, or so that you can reject instead of the other way around?
Exactly. Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you can not, you can be the one delivering the failure, not the other way around.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and by the way, I mean,
I love that idea.
But here's the thing, is that I mean if that's the case, and this goes for anybody's thing, like, if you get a job offer from, like, a major corporation and you have another job offer from somebody else and you choose before they make the choice from the large corporation, it's not going to feel the same to them as it would to you if you got rejected, because you're lost in the equation for them, right? Like, you're not, it's more of a commodity. But for you, if they reject you, you're going to take it personal, right? Mm-hmm. So in this instance, it's kind of like, if she decides, I'm just going to rescind my application, which is really what she would be doing. It's nice to have command over that situation. I know she's going to learn something no matter what. If she gets accepted, then she has to make a choice, right? If she decides, but either way, it is, failure shows up in a whole bunch of different ways, that there's no question that we fail at something every day.
Yeah.
Big or small. Yeah. The to-do list. I mean, how many times?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Like, there's no way.
All one needs to do is look at yesterday and see the undone things. Yep, those were my failures. Yep. Yeah,
exactly. Right there. And you can decide. Now, here's the interesting thing. This goes all the way back to you can look at that and go, here's what I failed to do. But which ones will, I think, you can, again, learning from it, if you're looking at your list, you're like, I didn't do these things. The ones that journaling will, number one, help you figure out which ones hurt the most. Because the ones that hurt most, they're the ones that should get your attention next, right?
Yeah, like,
right? So there's stimuli all around this.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Oh, gosh, that's a whole show in and of itself. I don't know if I want to even get into. But yeah, no, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. There is a famous artist by the name of Henri Toulouse Lautrec. He was a contemporary of Manet and, you know, part of the Impressionists. Lautrec has a very interesting story. He came from an aristocratic family, a very well-known at the time aristocratic family, were kind of known for their inbreeding, like brothers marrying sisters sort of thing, and therefore had, you know, some the kind of the reason why you don't do that and why it is frowned upon is not just because, ew, gross, but also because medically and genetically, it's not great. You end up with some a higher potential for defects. Henri Toulouse-Lautrec was born with a genetic defect that caused his legs not to grow. Because his legs did not grow, he was fairly short for, you know, a male, even of that time when men were typically short. But, you know, and he had this kind of body that looked strange because he had these, you know, kid-like legs on mm-hmm. top of an adult-like torso. And, you know, like, yeah. So.
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research, designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out Prolon as well. If you're ready to see how Prolon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, Prolon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today.
He was relatively shunned by society because of that, and found spent a lot of time kind of on the lower sides of life around the Moulin Rouge and within the various brothels that were connected to the Moulin Rouge and that area of Paris.
Right.
And much of his work, much of his art, is depicting scenes from that life, whether it was his poster work for the Moulin Rouge itself, or whether it was paintings of various performers at the Moulin Rouge, dancers, prostitutes, especially scenes in brothels. Now, what set Henri Toulouse-Lautrec apart from a lot of contemporaries, a lot of guys that might have, in that particular sense, you know, drawn nudes, you know, erotica, that sort of thing. He was far more interested in kind of the mundane areas of life around such things. And one of these is a series of lithographs he did that he was actually contracted to do by an erotic publisher to do these, you know, kind of an insider look at the brothel, right? And what the publisher was hoping for was lots of sexy pictures. And what Henri Toulouse-Lautrec delivered was not that, but was women, mostly, mm-hmm. living their lives, you know, waking up in the morning and having the lady of the house deliver their tray of breakfast, for instance.
Almost like Fun with Dick and Jane stuff, like see Barbara, like the mundane kind of stuff, but obviously done with a bit more artistic.
That is correct. And so amongst the series of lithographs was one in particular called, topic of this discussion, called Femme à Plateau. It's got a much longer title, but that's how it's colloquially referred to. Femme à Plateau, he did a series of 100 lithographs from that particular one. So there's 100 copies of these in existence. And just this past weekend, the opportunity came along for my wife and I to purchase one of those.
Oh, wow. Wow.
There are 22 in public collections, including at Metropolitan Museum of Art. MoMA, sorry, the Modern Museum of Art in New York, at the National Museum, National Gallery in Washington, D.C., at the Chicago Art Institute, and the British National Gallery. So just to give you an idea of the provenance and the elevation of this sort of work, I will not tell you what we paid for it. That is private.
Yes.
But I will tell you that we saw this opportunity. We did not immediately jump on it.
Mm-hmm.
We spent quite some time. Basically, we saw it. We saw the price. We were like, ooh, that's a stretch. But oh, boy, would it be amazing. Mm-hmm. As, quite frankly, Lautrec is like one of my wife's favorite artists of all time.
Wow.
Right. Like, so this was like a dream come true.
Have you both been to the Moulin Rouge then?
We did not go to the Moulin Rouge when we were in Paris.
Interesting.
We actually thought about it, but we had Beatrix with us.
Moulin Rouge is still
18 plus. So,
yes.
So the opportunity just wasn't really there for us to really do it in the time that we had. But I digress.
Sure.
The bottom line is this. We saw this. We looked at the price. It was a real stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, like I said, the universe puts things in front of you. And in talking about this, you know, so we left. We said, look, we're going to go look tomorrow. If it's still there, hasn't been sold, terrific.
Mm-hmm.
We'll cross that bridge when it comes. But we'll take a night to talk about it, especially amongst some of our friends who are artists, think about it, that sort of thing. And in the midst of this, I was reminded, my friend Garrick Van Buren, who you mm-hmm. have heard me mention before, if you followed my work, read my writing, you've seen his name pop up. I certainly consider him one of my mentors. He has this list of life's rules that he keeps. And I was reminded of rule number 16, which is opportunities to fulfill your dreams always arrive before you're ready.
Yeah. Yep.
And that is very true. And here was one, literally in front of us on the wall. Mm-hmm. And in those moments, you, speaking of choices, you have a choice.
Yep.
Because like dream fulfillment is always going to come before you're ready. So you can either walk away because you're not ready, or you can make the choice to stretch just a little bit further. That thing that's outside of your reach, beyond your reach for it.
Yeah.
Stretch yourself. It may be uncomfortable. It may be scary. You may be leaning over the edge about to fall, but you have a choice. You can either walk away or you can reach out and grab it.
As you're talking about this, I was thinking, first off, I was trying to figure out, because we can see each other when we're doing this. I was looking at my phone to look up that quote from Moulin Rouge, the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return. Because I'm pretty sure that John Leguizamo, who played Toulouse-Lautrec in Moulin Rouge, said that, even though I know it's not his quote. That's what I was making sure. Yes. Was it his quote or was it?
Yeah,
I know he also dabbled in poetry, too, if I remember correctly.
He did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing that comes to mind when you talk about stretching and stuff, because there's a few things, recently, even in the past couple of weeks, that have kind of, I've noticed the signs, right? Like this is something that, wow, this is kind of landing in my lap. Am I willing to stretch? Am I willing to do what it takes to make it happen? Mm-hmm. There's a couple, and some of them, by the way, some of these things, and I know you're using this as an example, but some of these things aren't as, you know, they're not like necessarily buying the lithograph that's rare or whatever, right? I will say there's a couple things that came up. Number one, I'll talk about a purchase that came up. The Lamy company that, has made fountain pens forever and ever and ever, recently got
in
sold.
German.
Yeah, they got sold.
Oh, interesting.
Mitsubishi, but the Mitsubishi brand that handles the Uniball stuff. So like they're so.
Oh,
in other words, well, and there's
why am I not aware of this pen?
It just literally came up. Yeah, it came up like a few days ago. I'm in a fountain pen group on social media. I know you're not really on social media all that much. So that's it was a Facebook group.
So, yeah, I'm not there.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm not anywhere, not there.
So it showed up, and there's like a letter of acquisition. And so I'm looking at it, going, I have been And sometimes these things, this is where the algorithm kind of being in an echo chamber can.
Oh, yeah.
There are benefits to that, right?
Yeah, so in sometimes this instance, the algorithm puts exactly what you
exactly
need.
Exactly, and it happened. It happened twice in the last 2 weeks for me. So both on Facebook, of all things. So so I'm like, and this is my mentality. Okay, I've wanted a Lamy 2000 for a long time, which is their signature fountain pen. Mm-hmm. It's been around since the 60s. It's changed very, very minutely, if at all. And I'm like, I want to buy one before the run of what they've already done is because I don't know what it will look like. So I want to have one that I know was made by, and I could be way off base and they could be like we're going to let you do it exactly the way you wanted. There's a lot of people that figure that they bought Lamy because of the industrial design, like the design principles and all of the stuff that they do, the German sensibilities, like that was part of it. But I think, I mean, Lamy, you go to an airport, like if you're looking for pens in one of the gift shops, like you're going to find Lamy ballpoints, Lamy fountain pens, all this stuff. You will not find a Lamy 2000 sitting in a kiosk but you will on Amazon. And they actually, so I'm like, I wonder. And I went to Amazon and they had one that was a Lamy 2000 that was on sale for Canada. Because in the US you can get them cheaper. So I pulled the trigger, which is, and I mean, let me put it this way. I don't take a $200 fountain pen purchase lightly. I mean, I know it's not a lot of money, but I have a lot
of fountain pens. It's not a Toulouse-Lautrec.
But I have a lot of fountain. Like you could argue, I mean, if you're not a fountain pen lover, like Mike, you have, like you're looking at four of them right now. Why? Mm-hmm. Like it's just that pen is kind of like, it's a grail pen. It's like one of the ones that people, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to stretch. And the second thing that came up was someone who is a colleague of mine that I've, you know, is in Toronto, posted that they were looking for somebody to house sit, the cat sit specifically. Now, much like my daughter who was applying to a university that was 5 to 6 hour flight away, Toronto is a 5 to 6 hour flight away from where I live. But all my family's back there, my mom, my dad, my brother, they wanted me to be there for early April, 2 weeks. They wanted someone for early April, that someone who has experience with cats, someone who, you know, and I'm like, let me look at my schedule. And I'm like, there's an open swath. I can do pretty much anything from where I, you know, on the road, provided like I can't do the podcast or anything like that as well, because I don't have my equipment there, but I can do almost, you know, I can do pretty much everything from the road. And I can also prepare because we're talking as of this recording, like six weeks out, thereabouts, five weeks out. But the thing is that where they are is right in Toronto. I've got a book coming out. I want to be able to connect with people in Toronto and start to plant the seeds. I would have a place to stay. I have familiar. Yeah. When I moved out west, I brought both of my cats with me. So it's not like I have all of that. We're friends. And I just said, I messaged her and I'm like, would it be cool? She goes, oh, this would be great. Like, first off, I know you're not going to be somebody that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a trust factor there.
Yeah, sure, of course.
But also, it happens to be around the time that my mother's birthday is happening. So that will be a surprise. You know, I don't think she's going to listen to this episode, so I'm sure I'm okay. But also,
you can get away with it.
But also, I had been looking at the eclipse that's coming, right? April 8th is the eclipse. And the last time it flew over the path of Canada, this kind of eclipse, a full total solar eclipse.
The path of totality, as they call it.
Yes, was in 1976, and it touched the Yukon. Like, that's the last time it happened, right?
And ain't no one going there. No,
well, unless it's my wife, who's from there. But I'm not going to go there. But either way, like, where it crossed, it was remote even for, like, I mean, it wasn't going over Whitehorse, let's put it that way. You would have to go out.
Yeah.
This time, the path of totality is going right over Niagara, like right over, like literally an hour from where I would be staying.
Cool. That's kind of cool.
And so I'm like this. So speaking of like fate and I'm like, this is landing in my lap. A flight from Vancouver to Toronto round trip is less than $300.
Yeah.
So I can I didn't have a chance to take a retreat last year, like my own personal retreat away. And I try to do one every year. This gives me the opportunity. My kids are old enough now. Like I ran it by my wife. She's like, yeah, go. Like, I mean, it's not gonna, you get to see your family. You got to talk to me. My dad is going through some health stuff. So I get to see him and deal with some of that stuff. I get to see my, I'm like, you know what? This makes all too much. Like the only thing that's stopping me is committing to the 2 weeks and $300. That's it at this point. Mm-hmm. Right. Done. Like, so again, when that, the opportunities present themselves, like you're saying, and what Garrick's saying is, you know, you don't know. So stretch, right? But the thing to me is there's a tolerance level that I think you have to be okay with. Right. Like, and when I say okay, I don't mean like, I think you need to get uncomfortable, but there are external facts. Like, I mean, I'm not going to, my wife and I would love to travel to East Asia. Like, oh, there's the seat sale right now to go to, like, we can go to Asia again some other time. Like, we don't want to put ourselves in any kind of jeopardy, I think is the key.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're not going to go out there and go, I'm going to buy this thing. And, you know, we're going to, like, you're in a position where you, like, there are factors there.
But there are factors.
I think
there's no question.
It's, I've been reading this book, and I think I shared it with you in a previous episode called The Perfectionist, I think it's called, by Simon Winchester, about precision, which again, when I'm picking up that Lamy pen, that's an example of like precision.
That precision,
But there's talk about accuracy, and in the very beginning of the book, they talk about like the nuance between accuracy and precision. And precision is like precise. Accuracy, there's a little bit of deviation according to his
right,
but tolerance is wider. Right. Like, what are you like the, so people hear like, what are you willing to tolerate? And tolerate often goes around behavior, but tolerance is so many. As soon as I saw that word, I'm like, oh no. Like, cause as a word nerd, I'm like, I'm going to be able to apply this to so many things. Like you're to do like back to like, when it comes to failure, what's your, what, how
what
much
is your tolerance? What,
what's your tolerance level? What's your tolerance?
Yes, exactly.
What's your tolerance? Yeah. Like, again, this is why things like the Ivy Lee method, where it's like six things. Like, if you get those six things done, that's your tolerance level for a truly productive day. If you do those six things, right? Or if you do five of the six, like, what is your precision around your to-do list means you have to have a very finely curated to-do list, because there's only so much time in the day. But if you keep tolerance in mind around all this stuff, around your choices, then I mean, because essentially every, and Annie Duke's talked about this. She's been on the show before. Basically, every choice you make is a bet.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. No, I think bet's a good word. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bet. Now, I mean, you don't know what the outcome's necessarily going to be, but you know.
I mean, you have a certain idea, obviously, the stove analogy, right?
You know. And so the tolerance level matters.
Well, exactly, because some people have a different tolerance for, say, pain than another person.
Yep. Or gambling in general. Like, I have this many. Like, when you're, I mean, and again, I'm not a poker. I know people who play poker. I know people who gamble. There are some people that they can go to Las Vegas or go to a casino and they go, this is my tolerance level of what I'm willing to lose.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And this is the reason why I don't gamble, because my tolerance level for that is zero.
So this is interesting because, you know, I've talked to other people about this and they're like, you know, why don't you gamble? I'm like, are you kidding? I run my own business.
Yeah, I gamble every day.
I gamble every day.
Exactly.
It's just in a different arena, right?
Yeah,
so your tolerance level. So I would argue.
We just gambled on spending way more for something than we really had the money to do.
But when it comes to your housing projects, it's like you are there. There's bets
There's no question about
it. But
I mean, the truth of the matter is that the market could drop tomorrow and I could lose all of the money there, right?
Right, but you can hold it though. That's a long game, right? That's, you know what I mean? Like, there's more of a, but my point there is, in a situation like that, and especially in a situation like I'm not gonna, I've bet on, every year I bet I've done this for the last 3 years since the Bengals got good. I will bet the dollar amount equal to the year. And when I say the year, not, I take out the 2000. Mm-hmm. So last year I bet $23.
$3 to
this year
you'll bet
that the Bengals will win the Super Bowl. This year it'll be 24. And that's the only bet I make on football. It's actually the only bet I really make on sports.
Yeah.
And why am I making such a minute bet
Yeah. Or
something that's not going to pay off huge because the Bengals are good. Like, they're decent enough now that it's not going to be a huge payout. But, I mean, right. They're still not the best team. And actually, this year, the odds are higher in my favor that they will, if they do win the Super Bowl, my odds are I'll win more if I do.
Right, right? Sure, yeah.
I don't have any control or command over how the outcome of that at all.
No.
The only choice I have is, do I bet the $24 or don't I?
Yeah. I mean, look at this last Super Bowl game. Oh my gosh.
Right.
Well, there were people losing their minds.
Well, there's people, but like a good example of somebody who's like gamed the system was the person who went out and streaked, right?
Oh yeah, sure.
They bet that there would be a streaker and then they went out and did it. Now, what's interesting about that story is most people are like, but isn't that fraud?
No.
Well, the thing is, according to law, if you are the one that affects the outcome of the bet, mm-hmm. then yes, it could nullify the bet. However, someone else streaked during that game. So there mm-hmm. were two of them. Mm-hmm. So their argument, and this lawyer said, my argument would be that he would have won either way.
Yeah.
Because the other person did it.
Yep.
So therefore, so the person won, like,
that's a heck of a hedge.
It's a but holy that's cats. So what's your, and by the way, the tolerance level for that bet, because you know you're going to jail.
Oh my God. Oh,
you know you're never going to get to go to a Super Bowl. You're probably banned from going to NFL games. You're banned from probably any NFL game. You're probably banned from going to Allegiant Stadium, period. Yeah. So you can't watch anything there. And in Vegas, you could be banned from doing a lot of things because of the fact that because that whole economy is based on gambling, right? So
it's like the casino with the whale that wins big and mm-hmm. then he's banned for life from that casino.
Yeah.
Because he's too good.
Yep. Yeah. So to me, again, all of these tolerance is such a huge factor in choice, failure. Like it's, you just have to decide what your, and it takes a while, number one, to decide what your tolerance level is. And it's very situational. Mm-hmm. It's very situational, right? Like, again, my daughter's tolerance for when it comes to making that choice, does she have the tolerance level to wait mm-hmm. to see what happens? Does she have the tolerance level to put, like, to go to that other university because it's in a different city that's further away, that's a bit more metropolitan as opposed to where she would go? Like, and then ultimately, when it comes to that choice, there is no failure in where she's facing now. What'll be interesting is the choice she's making. How we left the conversation was, I'm going for school. That's why I'm going. I'm like, that's exactly what, because you could always travel to the city that you were considering to go to school for. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think when it comes to all of this stuff, people need to keep, like, a question is, what's my tolerance level for this? Like, what am I willing, like that comfort factor, you know, the gap versus the gain people talk about and all that stuff. Like, how much am I willing to lose versus what I'm willing to gain? And
risk again, and reward.
Yeah. And as we get older, I think that our tolerance level increases because we've been through more. So we're like, I came out on the other side of this one. So,
we've had enough failure.
Yeah.
And we've gained experience through that. And we've had enough success and we've gained experience through that. Mm-hmm. Right. And we know, based on that experience, getting back to the Lautrec, right, is that we know how much we can comfortably extend ourselves financially and still be able to pay our mortgage we don't have a mortgage, but willing to pay, you know, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
right?
I get what you're saying.
Our bills, right? Yep. You know, and, you know, maybe that meets, it's funny. We actually are talking about having a little dinner party / cocktail party or something like that. So people, because we've had lots of friends who want to come over and see it. We should serve ramen and $2 chuck. as a metaphor for how we're going to have to eat for the next several months, possibly years, to justify that purchase. But yeah.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? These conversations never fail to entertain and inform. I didn't know that much about Lautrec either, to be honest. Patrick, as usual, always a treat. We'll have links to everything in the show notes.
Thank you so much, Mike. I enjoy this so much. Thank you for the opportunity.
And we'll see you next time.
All right. Take care.
Big thanks to Patrick for joining me once again for a special episode. And thanks to you for listening as well. If you don't want to miss a single episode of What's to Come, make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, you can go to the podcast episode page directly just by going to productivityist.com/podcast522. And that will take you to this particular episode you're listening to right now. Another thing you can do while you're on the website is to visit the sponsors that you heard during today's conversation. You can go to productivityist.com/podcast sponsors to make that happen. Click on any of the sponsors' links that resonate with you, and that way they know that we sent you there. That's it for this time around. We'll be back with a conventional, for lack of a better term, episode next time. Until then, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.